Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Supertalk 99.7.
12:05 on Supertalk 99.7 WTN. It is the Dan Mandis Show, 615-737-9986, 615-737-WWTN. Man, do we have a lot going on today. Let's get right down to it. Here's a big shock. Stormy Daniels, the lawyer for Stormy, who is apparently going to be in town, of course, this weekend, as we all know. Her lawyer is now says that she would indeed consider a settlement with Donald Trump. Now, I've been saying this for how long now? Clearly, this woman is an opportunist, and clearly, this is someone who is doing nothing but trying to make a money grab against President Trump. This has nothing to do with the truth. This has nothing to do with morality or politics or any. Well, it does have to do with politics if you're somebody on the left who's trying to use this against President Trump. More on that in a moment. But this was nothing but a money grab for Stormy Daniels and a publicity grab as well. And of course, we know that Michael Avenatti, the lawyer for this woman, this porn star, this stripper and so forth. Well, we also know that he is a liberal, a Democrat operative. We know all of this. So it's not real surprising when now all of a sudden this guy, the quote unquote outspoken lawyer of this woman, appeared on CBS this morning and said, indeed, his client would consider a settlement in her suit against President Donald Trump. Now, we know that this is a guy who has been going after the president, as has his client, for quite some time. Basically trolling the president on Twitter. Remember that whole conversation we had? I think it was yesterday, the day before, with that little disc. And he's basically saying, ooh, what's on this disc? Are there pictures? Are there emails? Is there proof of some sort of a quote unquote affair between President Trump and Stormy Daniels? Inquiring minds want to know. But it's all about the money. Daniels, of course, as we all know, is suing the president and his lawyer, Michael Cohen, the president's lawyer, to nullify that non-disclosure agreement she signed in exchange for $130,000. And he said earlier today, if they came to you with a settlement, he was asked in this case, would you accept it? And he says, oh, well, I think we'd consider it. I would converse with my client, he says. It would depend on the terms of a settlement. I'd be willing to bet she is going to get millions of dollars. So then you know what's going to happen next. Is there's going to be a boatload of other women that are going to come forward. We already know about, because I told you about this, that Playboy Playmate that came out and said, well, wait a minute. Well, he was cheating with me when he was married and still is married to Melania. He was cheating with me, and apparently he was cheating on me with this other woman. You know, at one point in time, our president of the United States was dating a European model, is married to a European model, and he's sleeping with a Playboy Playmate and a porn star. Again, clearly, we didn't hire President Trump, and we didn't vote for President Trump to be our moral authority or our beacon of morality here in America. Anyway, he says, Avenatti says, I think we would consider it. I would converse with my client. It would depend on the terms of a settlement. Which means that he's basically teeing this up for the president and his lawyers to sit down with him and say, okay, let's make this go away. Because that's what they tried to do with the $130,000. And now they realize this is one of those stories where clearly she thought way back when they signed this, when she signed this agreement, that the president would not ultimately be president of the United States. It was a quick cash grab. And now she realizes he obviously won the White House, and now she's thinking she can get a lot more. So it's all about opportunism, like we've been talking about, and like I've been talking about all along. So this guy Avenatti says, at this point, I don't see how the case gets resolved short of the truth coming out. Well, clearly, it's going to take millions of dollars. So we'll have to see what happens. But that is what the lawyer for Stormy Daniels has to say. Ultimately, his final quote on this is, my client, Stormy Daniels, wants the American people to know the truth. You know, I've circled that because I'd be willing to bet that within any kind of an agreement between Stormy Daniels, Michael Avenatti, and President Trump and his attorneys, there's going to be yet another agreement in there that ultimately says that she keeps her mouth shut. For once. So we'll have to see what happens. So we know that she's in it for the money. We know that she realized that $130,000 was not enough once the president did win the White House. And so now the question is, if she ends up signing some sort of a new agreement, well, then how long before she breaks that agreement? So there is a lot to talk about here with Stormy Daniels, although to be perfectly candid, I myself am somewhat bored of the conversation. You would think that the Democrats would be as well. But listen to this headline. Dems split on making Trump's sex life the center of their campaign. Now, what did I just say moments ago? I said that years ago, the president, before he was president, was, of course, married to his European model wife, and he was sleeping with a porn star and a Playboy playmate. Three, at least, as we know, three separate women at one time. So that's going to be the big question. Now, for a lot of folks, and certainly for the Democrats, this is one of those big questions, because the Dems don't really, in my opinion, I don't think the Republicans know either, but the Democrats, they don't really know which way to go as far as the midterm elections and the 2020 presidential campaign. Do they make Trump's sex life the center of their campaign? If you had asked me, what, 2-3 years ago, if you had asked me, hey, Mandis, would it surprise you in the least that it came out that Donald Trump was sleeping with his European model wife, a Playboy playmate, and a porn star? Would that surprise you? I would say no. Because you know what? I'm still worried. You know what little trifecta I was worried about during the election of 2016? I was worried about getting the wall built, illegal immigration, the war on terror, and our budget, among many other things. That was the trifecta that I was worried about. So all of the sordid little details about who, what, where, when, how, and why, and, you know, getting spanked by a magazine and all this other awkwardness, don't care. But the Democrats, at least some in the party, clearly do. This is from the Daily Mail. Democrats split on how much of the Stormy Daniels saga they should use to rain on President Trump's parade as they go after congressional Republicans in advance of the November midterm elections. You know, one of the things that I keep saying, and we proved this in, I think anyway, this was proven in Pennsylvania. You know, they had that Democrat running in Pennsylvania against that quote unquote generic Republican, and they really localized the race. What's the phrase that I keep hearing? Politics is local. And so what the Democrats learned in Pennsylvania, just very briefly, because you've heard me talk about this a couple of times, is the fact that they did indeed make it all about the issues. So in other words, if they're going to nationalize or federalize the midterm elections or, you know, make the focus more about President Trump, well, then I think that they're going to make a mistake. I've been saying that for a long time. So the Democrats, at least according to a couple of different sources now, including the Hill newspaper, this is a huge conversation that's taking place right now. Some Democrats eager to attack the president over his alleged affair with porn star Stormy Daniels, suggesting he is more vulnerable now to character attacks in the age of Me Too. You know, I'm going to go back to the same damn thing that I've been saying for how long now? And that is that whether it is Stormy Daniels or any of these other, you know, I call them personally, you've heard me utilize the term non-troversy. And to me, that's what this is. This is a non-troversy. This is something where a lot of people, I think, at least the folks that I've spoken to, and believe it or not, I talk to a lot of people. You know, most people that I know are like, yeah, okay, it all makes sense. You know, Trump sleeping with his European model wife and the porn star and the playboy. Okay, no big surprises here. And to be perfectly honest, I don't know how, as The Hill reported, I don't know how the president is, quote, more vulnerable now to character attacks in the age of Me Too. Because guess what? The porn star and the Playboy playmate, they were most certainly willing participants. Allegedly, that if this all happened. I mean, Stormy Daniels and she herself in that interview, I'm not going to bother to play the stupid audio again, but she is the one that admits, I shouldn't have gone up to his room, but she did it. So how does the whole Me Too campaign here in you know, 2018. What does that have to do with anything regarding the president being vulnerable to character attacks? But see, this is where the Democrats go wrong. If they're really having this conversation, and let's face it, you know, The Hill, it's a Washington, D.C. insider website and newspaper. So I guarantee you these conversations are taking place. But what are we really should be? What should we really be talking about here in America today? It's got to be about the VA, which, by the way, at 12:35, have an expert from the Weekly Standard on to talk about the fact that David Shulkin is now out as a VA director. And we've got Dr. Ronnie Jackson is the new head of the VA. I'm going to be honest with you, folks. The new head of the VA, I'm kind of scratching my head. I really am. Now, I'm not saying that I don't appreciate Ronnie Jackson's service. I'm not saying that I don't appreciate the fact that he has good things to say about the health of President Trump. You know, a guy that also served under Barack Obama and also George W. Bush. I'm just scratching my head because this is a position that has to do with being an administrator, somebody who can run things, these kinds of things, which, as far as I can tell, Ronnie Jackson hasn't done. You know, I fully expected, say, for example, Rick Perry or even Ben Carson. Why would not one of those two be far more qualified than Ronnie Jackson? So you know what I've been saying to you since the day that the president announced that he was running for president. I've made a pledge to you, and I keep it every single day. And that is, when the president does something right, then I'm going to applaud the president. When the president does something that's going to make me scratch my head, I'm going to say, really? So that interview coming up at 12:35 on WTN. Sorry, a bit of an ADD moment there. Anyway, so the strategists are talking about whether or not Trump's sex life should be the center of the campaign. Now, typically, when these stories come down the pike, you know, I'll call my buddy David Zanotti and I'll say, David, what do you think about this? But you know what? It doesn't take a rocket scientist to say that if the Democrats decide to make Trump's sex life the center of the midterm elections, I think that's something that is going to be disastrous for the Democrats. It really would be. Now, some are cautioning the Democrats because they've gone down this road before and they've gone through this conversation before. And as we all know, in the 2016 election, nobody paid attention. Nobody paid attention to the Access Hollywood tape, except for those people who already hated President Trump. So the problem for the Democrats is they just don't know which way to go. Now, there's another article that I have here in my rather large stack of stuff today. And the other question that the Republicans have, is the fact that after tax reforms, they're not sure where to go either. You know, the situation for the Republicans are the following, right? Okay, they got tax reforms pushed through. So we have a whole bunch of people all across America. They're making more money in their paychecks and less of their money is going to the government. It's a great thing. But then all of a sudden we have this $1.3 trillion spending bill signed by the Republicans, signed by a Republican president of the United States. So to me, I think that is a disaster for the Republicans, because here's the deal. They signed off on a budget that has very little to do with border security, has very little to do with balancing the budget, has very little to do with holding anyone accountable in our government regarding how they spend our tax dollars. That's the problem the Republicans have. And so what that ultimately will tell you is that whether you've got an R or a D or even an I next to your name and you are in the House of Representatives or the Senate, you done messed up. You really have. And frankly, I think the Republicans have screwed up more than the Democrats. Because you could probably say that their failure to make sure that there is more border security – You know, we need ICE agents. We need border control agents. We need the wall. And it's clearly, my opinion, not going to be built. I would say that this quite possibly could be the biggest campaign lie in the history of campaign lies. Because that was the core issue that people voted on in 2016. And for these Republicans to hide behind the fact that they are rebuilding the military, which is a good thing, but for these Republicans to hide behind rebuilding the military as an excuse for signing this monstrosity of an omnibus spending bill, when they know that there are far, far more issues than just rebuilding the military, that are core issues as to the reason why we voted in President Trump in the first place, and it was three words, build that wall. Now, the question is, can they figure out a way to deal with the wall and illegal immigration and all of the other things that we've been worried about here in America? Is there another way that they can get funding for the wall, funding for more ICE agents, funding for more border security agents? It goes on and on. If there is, they better darn right well figure it out, because the midterm elections, they are approaching. And I will tell you this, friends, as one conservative to more than likely a lot of others that are listening right now, I'm just going to tell you that I am righteously pissed off. And so while the Democrats are wondering whether or not they should make Trump's sex life a central theme in 2018 here in the midterm elections, if that's what they ultimately want to do, knock themselves out. But for me, there's a lot of other things that I'm really angry about. And frankly, when you are somebody who has been talking about and watching politics for as long as I have, when you see the fact that these folks, time and time and time again, they take the reasons why the American people put them in office and they just dismissively blow away our priorities so that they can work their priorities in, it can be incredibly disheartening. So what happens in the midterm elections? We'll have to wait and see. By the way, the president, word is he may try and figure out a different way to pay for the wall. And that story is coming up on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. On Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandy Show. I'm only seeing headlines here, so I'm trying to get some details on this story. Apparently, Laura Ingraham. Now, I did this yesterday too, but talk about David. I think everybody talked about how David Hoggy was having a problem getting into some colleges. There were four colleges in California that he was unable to get into. So, apparently, Laura Ingraham, at some point during her show on Fox News, claimed that David Hogg had whined about his college rejections. And she had tweeted out a Daily Wire story about his comments. Now, for the record, I even said, I think it was yesterday, whenever it was, I read to you specifically the comments that he had made. And I never said that he was whining. As a matter of fact, I thought that the fact that he didn't get into all those colleges, I thought he had a very, you know, I'm going to have to apologize in advance for the people I'm about to anger. But I thought he was actually had a pretty good perspective on that. He said, you know what? It's not my priority right now getting into some of these colleges. Colleges are overrun with a bunch of really good applicants, and I didn't get in. I'm busy changing the world. Now, I mocked the fact that he felt like he was changing the world, but now David Hogg then decided, I guess it was last night on, it was either Twitter or a TV show. Again, I'm trying to ferret out all the details here, but he had essentially said that, you know, Laura Ingraham needed to be boycotted. You know, advertisers and so forth. You all know how the left do all of those kinds of things. So now the headline is that Laura Ingraham has now apologized to David Hogg for mocking him. So I'm going to have to find out exactly what it was that that she is saying now about this this whole David Hogg controversy. You know where I stand on David Hogg. And I do like Laura Ingraham as well. I haven't seen much of her Fox TV show. I am wondering is if she really was starting to feel some advertiser pressure. I mean, good Lord, we know what's happening over at Fox News. We all know about what's going on with, Bill O'Reilly was basically forced off of Fox News. We had the whole Sean Hannity thing as well. They went after him. So, you know, it's possible that Ingram, she was feeling some pressure from some advertisers. And so she is now apparently, anyway, apologized for mocking David Hogg. I will let you know the latest on that and a whole lot more straight ahead. Coming up next, going to speak with one of our experts from the... ...1236 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandy Show, 615-737-9986. Got some breaking news. Apparently now a judge has denied the motion to depose President Trump courtesy of Stormy Daniels. So that is a setback, of course, for Michael Avenatti and Stormy Daniels. And that is breaking news. We'll have more on that as the afternoon continues to develop. Right now, though, I want to welcome on in Andrew Eggers from the Weekly Standard. Andrew, I always appreciate having you folks on from the Weekly Standard. So let's talk a little bit about former VA Secretary David Shulkin. He is blasting President Trump after getting fired, but not without some controversy. And the new guy is Rear Admiral Ronnie Jackson. So let's talk a little bit about this. I've been expecting Shulkin to be fired for weeks. I'm sure you have as well. It's almost like we've been on a Shulkin career death watch. And so we know that this is a guy who, from the very beginning, Shulkin was a very controversial figure within the Trump administration because he was an Obama leftover.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And I think that, you know, especially early on, there was some question as to whether or not, Trump was going to just purge most of the Obama holdovers just by virtue of there being Obama holdovers. I think that Shulkin eventually got a pass because he sort of presented a plan to the president that he bought into, which is that he was going to be able to deal with a lot of the waste and the mismanagement and things like that plagued the VA under Obama. As you know, there were a number of scandals about how they were handling veterans affairs and things like that. And throughout his first 6 months or so, or first year even, in that role, he seemed to really flourish, and he seemed to be doing some good things, or at least some things that the president approved of in terms of cleaning all of that up. And President Trump praised him pretty frequently throughout last year, saying that he was doing a great job, doing exactly what he wanted him to do. Obviously, that all changed in just these past couple of months with all of these revelations about his being wasteful with taxpayer money on his personal trips and things like that, specifically this one trip to Europe with his wife that involved a lot of sightseeing and things like that on the taxpayer's dime. And then even allegedly, sort of trying to cover up his tracks with investigators by having his chief of staff fabricate an email.
Right.
Saying he was. Yeah. So it's, I mean, clearly since then, it doesn't really matter how good of a job you were doing, how much the president liked you before. That's just the kind of real black eye and embarrassment to a presidential administration that it's honestly sort of remarkable that we didn't see him shown the exit sooner.
You know, what's interesting, and I was critical of his appointment at the time because we know, Andrew, you cover these things and I do as well. We know that there are many, many problems with the VA. And even though the problems with the VA started back in the George W. Bush administration, it really flourished under Obama. I mean, a bad situation got really worse under the Obama administration. And so I myself was a little surprised by the fact that, again, the Trump administration, President Trump, decided to bring in David Shulkin. Now, there was also an inspector's general report, I guess it was, that blasted him for Shulkin for, quote, serious derelictions of duty regarding some of the VA facilities that were under his watch during his time with the Obama administration when he was undersecretary. So that couldn't have helped his job prospects either as far as his longevity with the Trump administration. What exactly was in that report? Why was it so damning? Because we know about the business trips and you did a great job of lining those up. What did this additional report, when they were talking about specifically the Washington, D.C. facility, how bad was it?
You know, I'm actually not necessarily familiar with that report that you're talking about. The one that I've been reading and writing about was the one with the trip specifically, as well as just some other like personnel type issues. But that's not actually something that I've read about personally.
Yeah, I will tell you, they talk about mismanagement of funds. They talk about no real communication between the higher-ups and the people there in the hospital. So so they've been very critical, not only of his business practices, but also his managerial style. And he was really dealing with a mutiny amongst his staff there within the Trump administration as well, because they were furious at the way that he had been conducting himself. Now, one of the things that he's screaming about today in this op-ed that everybody's talking about is that Washington, D.C. is, quote, toxic, chaotic, subversive, and disrespectful. He doesn't really, though, talk about his own failings. And so, to me, is there anybody that's really going to listen to David Shulkin at all regarding what he has to say about the Trump administration and Washington, D.C., generally speaking? Because as far as I can tell, he doesn't talk about his own failings within this op-ed.
Right. I mean, yeah, there's no question that this is sort of like a face-saving measure on the part of David Shulkin. I mean, obviously, he does understand that the quickest way to sort of get your side of the story out there in the media or whatever is to sort of position yourself as an antagonist of the president, which has been the strategy we've seen a lot of people take just because, because President Trump is so unpopular in a lot of spheres, and especially media spheres, if you can sort of style yourself as sort of the enemy of your enemy, it's easy to make yourself a friend. But yeah, I mean, like it's there's no question it's sort of an irritation to the administration, all these allegations that he's making of sort of being forced out because he was, unwilling to sort of pursue policies of privatizing the VA and things like that. But, there's not a word in that op-ed about any of these actual, like, real scandalous, indiscretions that he underwent as secretary. So I think it's pretty transparently a dodge on his part.
Yeah, what's interesting too, I guess he also, I don't know if you're familiar with it, did he also try and finagle some tickets to Wimbledon as well? There was
right. I mean, yeah, there's a whole that was also one of the allegations that came out of this report. I have no idea whether he actually went to Wimbledon or anything like that, but it's pretty clear that the problem here was a real blurring of the line between what is the business of the American government and what was his own personal business while he was over there with his wife in Europe. I mean, there was even a little report in, I believe, the Associated Press or maybe Reuters earlier said, there were allegations that he had, brought his security detail to Home Depot to help him,
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that one. Yeah. Not a word of that in the op-ed. Now, the new VA secretary is Rear Admiral Ronnie Jackson. Now, he's been the White House physician for, three presidents? I guess my question, Andrew Eggers from the Weekly Standard, is there's no doubt this guy, he's a hero, served in the military. He is, I guess, the White House doctor, obviously served under three presidents. But I guess my question would be, is this guy qualified to head the VA? He has no real political experience to speak of. I don't know that he's ever even run a hospital before that I can see. I understand, especially when we saw people like Rick Perry and also Ben Carson, their names have been bantied about for quite some time as to maybe possible successors to David Shulkin. So I was a lot taken aback by the president deciding that Jackson would be the guy.
Right. Well, I think it speaks to a couple of things. And first of all, it's worth noting that Jackson is on a personal level, he gets accolades from all over the place. It's pretty well established that he's a really stand-up guy, really smart guy, served well under both Republican and Democratic presidents. So he has a lot of people willing to testify to his character and his intelligence and things like that. Clearly, that's a different issue from whether he has any relevant experience to take over this $200 billion federal agency that's so integral to the lives of a lot of veterans in America. So I think what it speaks to is first of all the president's own sort of thought process when he's going about these new appointments. Obviously, we all know there's been a lot of turnover in this White House. And one of the most interesting things that we've seen in that turnover is how President Trump likes to reappoint people who are already within his orbit to these higher positions. If he already knows and trusts and has good chemistry with a person, he's very, very likely to recommend them as a move up the ladder. And at the same time, that President Trump, you know, as a person who ran for office without a ton of, you know, relevant experience in terms of policy himself, just tends to value in potential appointees and things like that, potential more than experience. He's looking for people who are smart, who have chemistry with him, who are going to, you know, be on the same page as him on these policy issues. And he discounts a lot of the time. Well, I mean, you talk about Ben Carson, but Ben Carson was exactly the same way before he was appointed to his current role. I mean, he was a medical doctor. He became a political figure, not because he had served in government, but because, you know, he just had strong political opinions about things and grew kind of a following that way. Clearly a very smart guy, but not had never really served in a policy role. Similar to what he's doing now. We see that over and over again in this administration.
You know, it might be, Andrew, maybe trust. In other words, the president, he has trust in Ronny Jackson. And so that's probably part of it. I think one of the things that I've spoken about on my radio show, and many others have spoken about this as well, is that you mentioned the turnover that the president's administration is going through right now. And I think that part of what this is the president realizing, okay, well, I think I've kind of got this now. I've got a year under my belt. I want to work with people that are going to be working with me as opposed to against me. And we've seen that in a couple of different instances. Do you think that has something to do with the appointment of Ronny Jackson?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that I think it has everything to do with this appointment, that you're exactly right. He sort of feels like he's got his feet underneath him a little bit now. And then so even now, even more so than ever before, he sort of is comfortable with reshaping a lot of these departments, you could say, in his own image in a way that he might not have even been comfortable doing, you know, a year ago. Obviously, the question remains whether or not Ronny Jackson is going to turn out to be a competent secretary. He may not turn out to be a secretary at all. You know, there's been some burblings about his confirmation being run aground by people who are skeptical, you know, Democrats and Republicans being skeptical of his ability to run this agency. So he may not get in there at all. You know, and a lack of experience is not necessarily disqualifying that he couldn't turn around and do a good job there, but it does raise an enormous risk, I would say.
Yeah, and we all know, Andrew, the problems with the VA. We just had a veteran commit suicide in the waiting room of the VA facility in St. Louis. I talked about that yesterday. We know that the VA is still riddled with problems. You cover this stuff. You tell me, is the VA getting any better these days? I mean, and one of the things that that Chulkin said is that, you know, the president wants to privatize the VA. And so you tell me, one is, how strong is this movement to privatize the VA? And also, is the VA getting any better under President Trump?
So there's two separate issues that I think should be sort of teased apart here. And the one is whether there are, you know, structural, systemic problems in the VA that are just as a result of the way it's sort of put together as a public enterprise. And the other is sort of procedural or operational, you know, malfunctions and things like that. And one of the things that I think we have seen some actual improvements on is this sort of operational stuff. There was legislation passed last year that gave instituted some more oversight into a lot of these VA hospitals and things like that. Gave the VA more discretion to accelerate the firing of employees who were just, you know, derelict in their duties.
Yes.
or what have you.
Yeah.
So on that front, we have seen some improvement. I think that's the sort of thing that David Shulkin got a lot of praise for back in his happier days. Then on the other side of the coin, you have these, like you say, these more structural issues, which is just, well, is a public, you know, agency actually the best way to oversee all these hospitals? Isn't it always going to lead to these kinds of, you know, people slipping through the cracks and things like that just because it's you know, sort of a gigantic government agency? And we didn't see so much of those kind of changes under Shulkin. Whether we will see those kinds of changes under Jackson is an open question. But I do think that it's worth pointing out that we shouldn't put too much stock in Shulkin's own claims about the White House wanting to privatize the VA, just because, like I say before, that was sort of the excuse that he was leaning on to sort of distract, in my own opinion, during his or in his op-ed today.
Andrew Eggers, Weekly Standard. Always love having you folks on, and you have a great afternoon. It is 12:50 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. 12:57 Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Dan Mandis Show. How are you? I got a show Facebook page. It's Dan Mandis Show. Just look for it. And Katie, one of my favorite listeners, posted this on the timeline. She says, "Have you," something to the effect of, "have you," I should probably view the post before I start talking about this on the radio, "why aren't you boycotting Piggy Boy, David Hogg? He's not allowed any space or time on my page. Why are you still talking about this punk?" Well, Katie, I talk about this punk because of the fact that he is getting a free pass from the majority of the rest of the media. And so if myself and Phil and Michael and Brian didn't talk about this guy and tell the truth about this guy or this agenda that is spreading across America, then the truth would never be heard. But I totally get it. Hey, by the way, I want you to make sure that you are available the evening of April 16th. We're going to have a huge party. You know who the party is for? Phil Valentine and Johnny B. So all of us from WTN are going to be there and going to have more details to come. But just make sure that you are available April 16th, the night of, to honor Phil and Johnny and 20 years back in Nashville.